Okay, we copy that, Ron. The sounder still looks good, clicking right away, and the mapping camera, funny, I mentioned earlier, we haven't nailed down exactly what it is. Most likely, we think it's just an instrumentation erroneous indication. And so we're going to continue with the normal scheduled activities on the mapping camera, except, of course, for the deploy and retraction.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, yeah, that, let's hope that's what it is, then.
Roger.
I had to change that. It's starting to frame 55 instead of 54. I just took a picture of a crater on the, I guess, southwest of Christian.
Okay,
Ron. Different. It's got a light color, dike or something through the central peak at the bottom of the small crater. The crater is about 30 to 50 kilometers, I guess, in diameter.
Roger.
The small crater west of Condorcet.
Okay.
Now, the crater Pierce has got that same dark halo around its crater, and it extends out to, again, you can see it real well, out to about a half a crater diameter. You don't see any of the light-colored ejecta on top of it, though, like you do on Picard.
Okay.
That scarp sure looks like a flow boundary to me.
Roger, on the landing site scarp.
Yeah. I don't know how you get it to go up the north of my seat, but it sure looks like it runs that way. Just from the shadows and everything. Gordo, does this go all the way out to Bethel? Is it across the annulus ridge there?
It doesn't go all the way to Bethel. It stops short of Bethel about halfway across Serenity from the Taurus Ridge Road to Bethel.
Oh, okay. Forgot to look where it stopped. Okay, ended up on frame 92.
Okay, we copy that, frame 92. Okay, Ron, high gain to auto when you get a chance.
Okay, there's our 20 seconds or so.
This is Apollo Control at 1:36:54 ground elapsed time. We have now shifted over to Air Ground 1 for the first wake-up call to the crew of Challenger at the landing site. Tower's literal. We have dropped the command service module circuit, Air Ground 2. Live and listening on the lunar module circuit at 1:36:54. This is Apollo Control.
Challenger.
Sounded like Parker had the duty. Both monumental and epic.
Jack, I'm supposed to take you back to Caltech finals week.
How's everything look, Gordy?
Couldn't look better. How's it look to you?
Well, it's nice to rest it some.
All right, John, sure of that.
Consumables look today.
They look good, as expected, right on.
This is Apollo Control. The wake-up music this morning for Challenger was the Rite of the Valkyries from Richard Wagner's opera Die Walküre. Apparently, Jack Schmidt, when he was at Caltech, had his roommates sitting bolt upright in bed of a morning by playing this on the stereo system. And this was the appropriate choice of music for waking him up this morning. 30 minutes from...
Hey, in a jiffy. Oh, your sleep restraint up there? I need your hammock. Either way, I'll stuff all mine into this compartment here if you're going to get your. Or otherwise, we could be racing. Scott, look. Gordy, you guys held calm pretty well last night. I only remember one break.
How's it, Jack?
Take you off biomed for a minute. 3 amp light is on, but I guess supposed to. Well, how about it, Gordy? Are we stay or no stay for EVA 2 prep?
Here stay. Never any doubt.
Thank you, sir. Have any medication? Fire reports of food. Okay, Gordy, status report is excellent. No medication for either one of us. CDR slept 6 hours pretty good. I slept 6 hours intermittent, but generally good.
Okay, Jack.
And we've eaten well, I think. The food's a little bit confused since we had our little minor explosion in the cabin. But I think you could say it's good. We've had a lot to drink, a lot of juices. We ate the frankfurters. We're sharing a lot of the stuff because it's not symmetrically packed. If you want more details, it'll take time. We did not eat the corn chowder.
Okay, Roger. You did not eat the corn chowder, but most everything else on the menu, is that right?
Yeah, I think just about everything else. We got into maybe mixed up through two meals, but essentially the meal B and C for yesterday were eaten. Except for the corn chowder.
Okay, Jack. Copy. I'm wondering if you could come up with a quantitative estimate on water you've each drunk and also your PRD readings.
Stand by, Gordy. That may be difficult. PRD. Yeah, we'll get the PRD a little bit later when we start shooting up.
Yeah, okay, that'll be fine. My mistake.
Hey, Gordy, on this water, we saturated ourselves before we went out. I finished my drink bag out in the suit on the surface. Jack finished about better three-quarters of his. We've had water in teas and in the juice, and we have been drinking water constantly post-EVA. And to give you a quantity is almost impossible.
Okay, that's fine.
If the water's down, it's probably because we've been drinking it. And I'm ready for your liftoff pad data.
Okay, for ref 26, liftoff time is 138.4015. 27 is 140.3849. 142.3722. 144.3555. 146.3429. 148.3303. And the last one, rev 32, is 150.3137. Go ahead.
Okay, rev 26. Is that the first reverse?
That's from.
Okay, rev 26 is 138.4015, 140.3849, 142.3722, 144.3555, 146.3429, 148.3303, 150.3137. And what's our present rev?
Okay, I'll have to check out myself. We're on rev 25. He's about three-quarters of the way across the front side. Coming up back side, we'll start 26. And for your information, he's running a VHF sounder, and it's working fine.
That's good to hear.
By the way, good morning, Gordy.
Good morning, Commander.
How's America itself looking?
Just as good as ever. Ahead on the consumables, no problem on the spacecraft systems. Only minor funnies in the sim bay, but even it is almost 100%.
Okay, and I guess from, I didn't hear your comment, but I assume Challenger is the same way.
That's firm. That's the way it looks here, anyway. Challenger Houston, we've been working while you've been sleeping on a fix for the missing fender. John Young's been over working it out in a suit with the mock-up rover, and we have about probably 5 to 10 minutes worth of words on how we want to go about that. Whenever you have that much time to listen, it'll be mostly listening on your part. Let us know.
Okay, Gordy, will do. No idea, but just uttered it. IBE. Ag. ISSO. Gordy, you've implied that we may be a little behind on water. Is that correct?
No, that's not the problem, Jack. I think our concern was more that you were taking up enough on board internally.
Out of water.
That's right, that you were drinking enough, so that's what we were worried about.
Okay, we'll keep pushing it. Cold scrambled eggs. Gordy, we're going to start to eat here. Why don't you talk to us about that feather?
Okay, let me round up John Young. He's stepped out for a second. We'll have him here in a minute. Might as well let the resident expert on feathers talk. Okay, I'll now turn the microphone over to Captain Young.
Hey, Gino, this is John. We spent a...
Hello, John, how are you doing?
Oh, just fine. You guys are doing a superb job. Really beautiful. Hey, we spent some time on this fender problem and worked out a pretty simple-minded procedure, which involves essentially taking four of those chronopaque pages out of your lunar surface maps, ones that you're not going to be used for discussing the site, taping them together with gray tape so that you end up with a piece of paper about 15 inches by 10 and a half inches, and then using the AOT lamp clamps, pre-positioning them full open, taking them out, and taking that piece of paper out, laying it on top of the fender guide rails, and clamping the edges of it with the AOT lamp clamps. It's simple and straightforward, and the beauty of it is you're only spending about 2 minutes in the clamping operation, and it could save you up to about 12 dusting, I think, maybe. What do you think?
Yeah, John, I think we ought to try something, because you told me, but I guess you can't appreciate it until you see it happen yourself. That dust without that fender is just almost unacceptable. This sounds pretty good. How do you want those things taped together?
You just take four pages and allow... Well, I've got the detailed procedures here if you're ready to copy. Over.
No, I'm not ready to copy yet, but what do you do, tape the four squares into a bigger square, about 16 by 20?
Yeah, allow about an inch of overlap and tape both sides of them.
Okay.
And then you get the AOT clamps off the utility lights and open the clamp jaws to max. And you stow the clamps and you roll up the paper, roll up your fender shortwise and put a gray tab over that and stow it in the ETB. You got both the clamps and the paper fender in the ETB, and then when you get out to the rover, you lay the edge of your fender over the inboard guide rail and clamp it, and then you lay the other edge of the sheet over the outboard rail and clamp it. And the only thing you really have to worry about is make sure that the inboard clamp is right over the shock strut so that you don't get any interference with the LRV structure when you turn the wheels.
Yeah, that's the type of thing I was going to ask about, some of the subtle points. There really should be quite a ways... I'll look at it, but almost vertical over the hub, right?
Yeah, on the inboard one. On the inboard one. On the outboard one, if you put it a little further back aft on a wheel, it allows you to give your paper fender a little more rigidity.
And you just say lay them over the guide rails, sort of clamp with the clamps, so the clamps are also over the guide rails, and not try and line that the makeshift fender in the guide rails themselves, huh?
No, it just clamp the thing right to the rails, just allow a little overlap and then clamp that rascal right down. And I know you can tighten those clamps down so good it'll never get loose. I know you can do it if I can do it.
Okay, John. I think I know what you're talking about, and I'd sure like to give it a stab. The only hunker is I hope that tape holds those fenders together well enough.
Yeah, they...
Those pieces together well enough.
Roger. One of the things that you, when you're taping the pages together, that you want to be careful of is that you make sure and get the air bubbles out, so when you get in the vacuum, it doesn't open up by itself. And maybe you can put an X across there to make sure that if you get any separation, that it's still held together pretty good. We think the tape will work.
Okay.
Think the tape will work because back about in 13, we were using it just sort of incidentally in the thermal vacuum chamber, and it worked okay there for some reason.
Well, it would seem to stick on the surface okay if I could find a dust-free spot when I put that other fender on earlier.
Yeah, I agree.
As far as how much of the new fender overlap on the present fender, just make it about symmetrical with the other side, probably ought to give me plenty of overlap, huh?
Well, if are you talking about over the dovetail part of it, or are you talking about off the aft end of the vehicle?
I'm talking about the present fender that's on there, the aft end of that fender, about how much overlap do you want with this makeshift fender? Just give me an idea. I think I can figure out when I get there, but I'd rather have your feeling before I do.
We think if you get it out about 4 inches past that fender, you understand what this looks like when you get it put on the fender, is it just looks like sort of a roll, and you end up with a sort of a straight fender right out the back end of the rover, about half a pipe straight out there. And if you get it out 4 or 5 inches, why, that'll keep the dust from coming back over the vehicle.
Yeah, that's the answer I want. I can see about 4 or 5 inches straight.
Yeah, it's just sort of a horizontal fender like on an old automobile.
I thought I understood what you were talking about.
Hey. Say again, Gino.
Hey, John, this is Jack. Did you say pipe there a minute ago? P-I-P-E?
Yeah, but it doesn't roll up into a circle. It's sort of a hemisphere. I mean, it's half of one.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought I was with you until you said pipe, and then you lost me. Okay, I think I understand, too.
You know the problem I have with communications.
Hey, thank you, Dave. We'll give it a try.
And I think we can
get something to work.
Okay, and we can watch on the tube and make recommendations. I think you've got the idea of it. Terry Neal thought of these AOT clamps, and that's a great idea because you can clamp those things on that old dovetail. You can put a force on there. Chronopeg pages will never get loose.
Yeah, all those other clamps we had, I was thinking about paper clips, type clamps that never hack it.
We tried that. They just don't have the push.
Sounds good, babe. Appreciate it.
Okay, we've got a detailed procedure here if you want to copy it just in case.
Yeah, stand by one though.
Okay.
Hey, you know, after thinking and looking at some maps last night, and recalling what I saw during landing and where I was planning on putting it down and everything, I still think, to the best of my knowledge,
that we are about 1 to 2 o'clock, and I'll increase it up to about 200 meters or so west and slightly north of Poppy.
Okay, Gino?
Gordy, the thing that fooled me yesterday is this depression out at 9 o'clock here, which is just greatly undersized for Triton. Really is a Triton, and I said yesterday I didn't think how we could be that close. Well, we really are. Triton is way out there, and I'll still hold to my 200 meters at 1 to 2 o'clock of Poppy.
Okay, we're thinking you might have on the way to the geology stop driven between a couple of the Triton craters in.
Yeah, we may have coming back. I think I went all the way around to the east of the last one going out though.
Okay.
If you had asked me at 3,000 or 4,000 feet where we were going to land, I could have told you exactly. But once you decide where it's going to be, then you decide where in that where it's going to be, and you forget everything else around you.
Roger.
Gordy, when you land on a boat, all you're worried about is that the boat's there, and you will let the captain worry about where it is.
Hatch.
This is Apollo Control at 137 hours, 34 minutes. America with Ron Evans is behind the moon. We'll acquire in 40 minutes on the 25th revolution.
Gordy, while we're eating, have you got a short synopsis of the news?
Yeah, I sure do. Stand by one. We'd like Biomed left, please.
I don't have any sensors out, Gordy.
Okay.
I have to wait till I start putting my suit on.
Okay, as you might expect, front pages around the country are headlining last night's EVA with photographs taken from TV monitors showing you and Jack going about your tasks. And I might add that the TV camera is really spectacular. It couldn't have been a clearer or more beautiful picture, both for fidelity and color. In other news, South Vietnam's President Tu has suggested that all prisoners of war be released before Christmas. He has also asked that all Vietnamese parties be included in peace negotiations. South Vietnam and the Viet Cong are now not directly represented in the secret talks now underway in Paris. Meanwhile, Kissinger met for more than 4 hours yesterday with Hanoi Representative Lee Duc Tho. The two negotiators are expected to meet again this afternoon. Former President Harry Truman is still resting quietly, although his condition remains serious, according to his doctors. American poet Mark Van Doren died at the age of 78. He was a professor of literature at Columbia and a winner of the 1940 Pulitzer Prize for his poetry. President Nixon announced yesterday that he wants to extend wage price controls beyond the scheduled April 30 expiration date. He also plans to freeze new hiring, promotions, and pay increases for executives of the federal government, which doesn't affect us, I guess. The Republican National Committee has a new chairman.
How about me?
George Bush of Houston, who is now ambassador to the United Nations. He will continue his UN post through the present session of the General Assembly. Both national political parties are now headed by Texans. As you recall, Robert Strauss of Dallas became chairman of the Democratic National Committee last Saturday. And Jack, I'm sorry to say, but you've been replaced. The Nimbus 5 weather satellite is now operating in orbit after its launch from Vandenberg early Monday morning.
Can it talk?
Joe Namath tried mightily to lead the Jets to the playoffs, but the Oakland Raiders grounded the Jets in the fourth quarter, 24-16. I think you already heard that score. Namath passed for more than 400 yards, but it was only able. New York only scored one touchdown. And the last item concerns the Houston weather, which has been there's been two kinds of weather since you all left us. That's cold and light rain, and cold and heavy rain. And it's still doing it. Fog and drizzly rain are here now, and we're only supposed to get up to the mid-40s and probably down to 32 tonight. Over.
Holy moly, that's not too good on the weather. I'm going to take a look. You're right up the over here. Right, there's a band of clouds that comes right up the coast of Mexico. Looks like it's coming home to the Gulf, and then gets buried there, says it gets up into the Texas area, southeastern part of the United States, with a with a counterclockwise rotation, which is very dead, out over the Atlantic, I believe, off the east coast of the southern east coast of the state. And from about, I'm guessing maybe the center of Texas, straight north and straight east, it looks like the whole country clobbered.
Roger.
Baja looks nice. West coast of Mexico looks nice.
Roger.
And Torres Litro, the weather's great. Hey, Houston, Challenger.
Go ahead.
Roger, Gordy, how's the ALSEP doing? And in that light, I hope you people will take as close a look as you can at the signal strength and its variation, and see if you can get some idea of whether when I go after the neutron flux tomorrow, I ought to work on that antenna alignment again. I'm still a little bit concerned about it.
Okay, Jack, we'll consider that, although they've been getting good performance out of the central station, as I understand, and a couple problems with the experiments. One was the LEAM data isn't syncing up like it should. I'll have to get a further, more complete story on that. And we're thinking that's most likely a ground software problem. The other one is the LSG isn't leveling up properly, and we'll cover this further in the the planning briefing for the EVA here, but we're probably going to let you off, have Gino let Jack off at the rover, I mean at the LSEP, let him off the rover at the LSEP, and take another look at the leveling on the LSG. That'll be at the end of the EVA.
Roger, I may just run out there and let Gene pick me up after we, after I turn the, well, he picks the fender maybe. We'll work that out for you. I'm joking, but maybe I could go kick the lean. That might help us.
Let's make sure we got all our problems solved down here before you do that.
Okay, hey, Family Mountain, the north east facing slopes, although lower, has boulders and outcrops. I mean, let's delay the outcrop. It has boulders from local lot concentrations. Looks very much like the South Massif does.
Roger.
About had it, I think. What's it? Chocolate? Huh? No, I've had two. Hey, Gordo, we're still eating, but let me give you a few observations. That outcrop I talked about that was way at the top of the South Sea, at the break and slope, at the very top of the break and slope, almost looks, it's hard to tell that it's displaced outcrop up there.
It's hard to convince myself that it is. Looks like there's some very large and many, many small fragments of large, like 3 to 4 meter rocks up there, and a lot of smaller fragments. I see that type of thing in a number of places over the South Massif. However, I do see they all seem to be sitting on top of the South Massif surface. But I do see one other area that it looks like there is it is protruding from within some sort of mantle on the South Massif. So conceivably, some of that could be in place. An additional impression I got is that at least with the monocular, that those fragments, those boulders, look much more angular than what we've seen here. And for the most part, they appear to be, if covered at all, very little by any mantle except the one I just mentioned.
Okay, copy that.
And Gordy, through the monocular, in contrast to the tan gray of the South Massif, those large blocks up there look blue, fairly distinctly blue-gray, not unlike Gene mentioned yesterday, anorthosites look in certain terrestrial environments.
Roger, Jack.
And Gordy, now that I get my my three-dimensional eyeballs working, I can look up on the scarp out to 9 and 10 o'clock. It's practically the same color as the South Sea. It just looks to be very undulating. I see no outcrops evident from here in the scarp. I think I can just about see where a hole in the wall is, but it's so subtle that I can't really tell you much about it, and the local terrain, which I think is the southern rim of Camelot, just about blanks out where a hole in the wall should be, just about covers it up. But what I can see in a small little saddle through our local horizon here in front of us, I can see out there just about, I'd say 100 meters or so to the south of hole in the wall, and it just looks like a subtle undulating slope. We can't really tell too much about the steepness from here.
Okay, Gino, stand by one. Okay, I had something for you, but we just decided to cancel a call. Although when you do get out the prep and postcard, I have one write-in for you. So just holler when it's handy.
Okay. Wrapping up our eating and drinking here now, Gordy. We'll be ready to go in a minute.
Okay.
This is Apollo Control at 137 hours, 55 minutes. The crew of Challenger is 1 hour behind their timeline. This is a holdover from EVA 1. We will continue to run this hour behind. So unless we get further behind during the EVA preparations, we would anticipate EVA 2 to begin around 140 hours, 10 minutes elapsed time versus the 139 hours, 10 minutes in the flight plan. 140.10 would be a few minutes past 5 p.m. Central Time. America is still out of range. We expect acquisition in 18 minutes.
Gordy, Challenger, could you ask somebody there in the FAO console to where the hygiene kit is stowed?
Okay, will do. Jack, take a look on the right-hand side stowage compartment there on the forward lower corner under the LEC kit compartment.
you broke up with a changeover or something. Say again.
Okay, Jack, you're right. I got caught right in the middle of a sight handover. Look on the right-hand side stowage compartment, the forward lower corner under the LEC kit compartment.
Fantastic. You picked the one place I'd never looked.
Thank you.
Houston, Challenger.
Go ahead.
One quick thought about the gravimeter, and I'm sure it's been mentioned, but I'll say it. During the CF squared, we asked about that bundle of wires that has contact with the gimbal. And when I deployed it, that bundle was, it still had contact with the gimbal, and everybody at the CF squared said that was okay, but you might think about it. I don't know what I could do to help if that is the problem, but that might be causing a problem here that wouldn't cause on Earth.
Okay, Jack, I'll make sure the experts hear that.
Gordy, everything okay at all today?
Yeah, everything's fine here.
Well, thank you.
I'm not sure I copied your question precisely. Haven't talked to your home today at all.
Okay, don't worry about it. I just thought you might have heard. If you hear it, Gordy, just tell them they're missed.
Okay, I'll sure do that.
Gordy, has anybody heard from Tucson recently?
Check on that, Jack, just a minute.
And, Gordy, if you have any updates to the EVA-2 checklist, give me a yell.
Okay, the update I do have, I think the EVA checklist changes will just call you real time, but I do have one for the prep card. Okay, on the front side there, middle column, lower half, at 138.45, OPS connect. Halfway down it says install purge valve and PGA red to red. Mark that LMP serial number 211, CDR 208. This is to maximize the OPS operation should you have to use it.
Okay, give me the numbers again, please.
LMP 211, CDR 208.
I take it those are serial numbers.
That's right. The serial numbers on the purge valves.
Okay, Challenger, this is Houston. Would you like to have a little update on the EVA plans?
Do you want me to take notes?
No, I don't think there are essentially any notes required. I'll make a few real-time call-ups to you, but I don't think there's anything you really have to write down.
Bob Parker is Capcom now.
Okay, Bob, I realize that things were getting a little hectic yesterday, but if we end up making any changes where I don't need to get a charge in my hands, that's an awfully good thing to call, because not only does it tie your heart, your hands out holding it, but it means that you don't get as many pictures or rover samples or anything else.
Roger, you guys were just ahead of us there. We were trying to get that up to you. Okay, no, I don't think there's anything here that really needs to be written down. I'll go through with you first, and we can talk about details and writing in if you want to on any of them, but I don't think there's anything that really needs to be written in. The EBA, it's going to be essentially nominal. A few minor exceptions. One is the we've allowed about 5 minutes extra at the LEM before leaving for the rover fender fix, and John will be talking to you about that in a minute. And the second big change is that we're also allowing 5 more minutes at the end of the EVA so that we can have extra time for dusting. And I suspect that if the rover fender fix works and we aren't getting as dirty as we did last night, then we may gain back that 5 minutes. We're also allowed, what we've done is we've taken the time here out of some of the tasks at Station 3 and Station 4. And along with the fact that we think you're a little bit further east than planned, and we're allowing 4 minutes additional driving time. But again, that's all real time, and if we're doing well on time, we can reinstitute all those tasks and get rid of the 5 minutes that we're allowing here, there, or elsewhere. So that's just sort of to keep in your thinking. There is the possibility we'll have some additional overhead at each stop, depending on what the rover battery temperatures are when you get out this morning. If they're high again, then we'll have to probably park at least on some of the stops, if not all, with the upsun heading and dusting the battery covers and then opening them to let them cool. But again, that will depend upon what we find on the rover batteries when we get out this morning. The variations that we found on the surface of the South Massif, indicating the possibility of layering, I guess you saw those mostly with the monocular,
And the observation of boulder tracks and the size of the massif emphasizes the importance of sampling boulders that can be traced to sources at various elevations in the massif. And I guess we should say that's hopefully. And we'll just have to see what happens when we get down to station two on that. But if we see boulders with tracks, I'm sure you guys remember that they obviously will have a higher priority. Since we didn't get to Emery, and since we didn't really get to the rim of Steno itself, the question of sampling the actual subfloor is still somewhat ambiguous, although there's a large consensus opinion that says that we've sampled the subfloor when we sampled that intermediate gabbro that we sampled yesterday both at the ALSIP and Station 1. There is a possible alternative conclusion which says that the subfloor has not been sampled, but that these blocks that we sampled and the surface are both parts of a later flow. And in that line, we're still looking for specific observations which will help us distinguish between whether or not the dark mantle is a, whether the dark mantle is a separate unit from the intermediate gabbro that we're seeing, or whether it's the, standby. Okay, whether or not the dark mantle is an entirely separate unit from the intermediate gabbro you were sampling yesterday, whether it just represents the top very well churned up layer of a flow that was later than the subfloor, if you see what I'm saying there. All of this says that we're very interested, of course,
Roger,
now.
Bob.
All this says that we're very much more interested in Station 5, as you might expect, than we were before. And I guess for this reason, we'll be trying to keep the timeline a bit tighter than usual to guarantee we've got some time left over at Station 5. And we're also interested in moving, perhaps moving Station 5 from its present location there in the southwest of Camelot over to the southeast or east, or some location where we have a feeling that we've got big boulders up on the rim. This would be so that we could sample hopefully some of the white material and some of the boulders together and get a better confirmation that the material from deep in the subfloor unit is this intermediate gabbro as opposed to just material from the upper part of the subfloor. It's just a matter of proving to ourselves whether or not the boulders we sampled yesterday are from deep within the subfloor, only the surface of the subfloor, or perhaps, as I said, the other alternative being that the intermediate gabbro is part of the dark mantle and we're seeing a churned up regolith on top of it, sort of being the gaseous upper part of the flow having been broken down rather rapidly into the dark mantle. Okay, stand by a minute. Okay, to summarize that again, reading, I guess I got ahead of myself here in the little spiel I wrote up. At the present time, we have two working hypotheses for the dark mantle and the gabbro relationships to each other. One, the crystalline rocks that we found, the gabbros, are an upper unit of the subfloor with their dark mantle cover unrelated to them in time. Key observations that they suggest here is stratigraphy at Camelot, Station 5, and other deep craters, especially perhaps a trench in sheltered spots which are ungardened, as in plowed, or an older regolith underneath the dark mantle, if such a thing could be found. We don't think we found that yesterday. Or a look at the superposition relations between dark mantles and boulders, or the mantle, instances of the mantle on the boulders, or inversely, of small boulders on the mantle. The second working hypothesis is that the dark mantle is regolith derived from a vitreous vesicular flow tops of the crystalline rocks both beneath. And that, again, goes to say that perhaps the gabbro we sampled yesterday was indeed the late flow, and that what the regolith was derived from the vitreous vesicular flow tops, as it were. Again, many of the same observations are called for. In particular, they'd be interested then in looking at the coarser fines, which they define as from a millimeter to 20 millimeters, for some sort of transitional lithologies and textures. In other words, what do the small walnut-sized rocks look like, if you can, in hand specimen? If I can get more specific in terms of EVA mechanics, let me say that we'll call out in real time the deletion of the task at station 3 and 4 if they become necessary. And what we're planning on doing is deleting the trench in the base of the scarp at station 3, and also deleting the radial sample on shorty at station 4. That's provisionally what we're planning on, and depending on how the time is going, we'll call that out in real time. We also have the experiments remain pretty much the same. We will deploy the charges at the same locations as we're planning in the checklist at the present time. We also don't, if you're planning further ahead, we don't anticipate any significant changes in EVA 3. The charge number 5, which we were going to deploy at Emory, will not be deployed during EVA 2, but we'll deploy it on EVA 3 out at station 10. And what we're going to do there is when you take the 8-pounder and put it between the seats, we'll then have the 3-pounder left over, and we'd like to put that on one of the foot pads in the sun. That's probably either the minus Z or minus Y foot pad. And we'll leave it there in the sun until the start of EVA 3, in which case we'll put it in the rover underneath the LMP seat. And thermally, that looks okay. There is the probability that we're going to play the return to the ALSEP game. And we're going to do this for a couple of reasons. One, we're going to go back and look at getting some more ALSEP photos. I guess Gordy says you've got that. And that would probably be at the end of EVA, in fact, will certainly be, if it happens, at the end of EVA 3 when you go back to get the neutron flux probe. I might also say with regard to EVA 3 that obviously we're more interested in Station 10 than we were before. Another return to the ALSEP goodie that we're looking at, if we have the consumables today when we get back finishing Station 5, is that the lunar surface gravimeter has been unable to level itself over the night. They sent, you know, some thousand commands trying to get it straightened out. And they say it looks as though it's not level. And so we'd like Jack to go back with his practiced hand on bubble levels and recheck that at the end of, after Station 5 today, if there's sufficient consumables. And we plan for Gene to just let Jack off and let him walk back to the LEM after he gets off and looks at that. And that's about everything we have. As I say, in summary, the big changes are going to be extra time at the beginning, taking care of the fender extension, and the probability of extra time at the end. I will have to see how well the fender works and how things go. The probability of extra time at the end to allow for dusting. And the time spent on those particular activities will probably end up taken out of the task at Station 3 and Station 4. Over. Comments?
Okay, Bob, we copy all that. Obviously, you're going to have to catch us in real time on some of the details there on the charges and the task deletion. One question. Did you say we were going to delete the trench at Station 3?
Roger, the trench at the base of the scarp. In other words, some of the stuff that you would be doing while Gene was taking the double core.
What do you gain by that?
Well, I'll no comment on that, Jack.
If you haven't deleted Gene's task, then what am I supposed to do?
You're supposed to help Gene, I guess.
Well, but that's not the way we worked it, Bob. Let's play that one in real time.
Roger. That's why I said I'm not. There's no point in marking up the checklist on that, Jack. Now, let me hit you with one more thing concerning the battery temps. An initial reaction down here is that the battery temps were high on deployment because of particularly unfavorable heat soaking on the way out. And the Marshall people are hopeful that they'll be back to normal this morning. However, we're obviously anxious, as I'm sure you are, to get an early reading on the battery temps. That's number one. And number two, just for the off chance that the meter's not working, and I think we pretty much discount that because of the way the meter worked yesterday, but on the off chance the meter's not working, you might just lean over and see if the meter is reading zero before you punch in the circuit breakers, because that would give us at least a partial confirmation in that direction that there's not something wrong with the offset. So if they're reading, sitting there reading 30 or 40 degrees, then that probably says something about the offset. And beyond that...
Yeah, the
Go ahead.
I'll look at that, Bob, but the meter's indicated in terms of temperature change. I'll look and see if there's a bias on them at all.
So, Raj, we again also think that that's probably not too likely.
Bob, I think, based on what I saw yesterday, that the chances are pretty good that all the big blobs out here in the dark mantle area will be pretty much the Gabbro. By the way, I looked at that with a Hadland last night. I don't know that you got the report. And I'm back to saying that it's probably closer to 30-40% plagioclase. It's probably just a good Gabbro, final piercing Gabbro, and it apparently has a fair amount of ilmenite in it. There's some bright, shiny plates within the mug and some dark minerals in the matrix that probably ilmenite. And one other additional possibility then is that the mantling we're seeing here is the is just dark, fine glass, darker than usual because of the iron and titanium in the rocks themselves. Also, the probability, I think, still has to be considered that you're dealing with a true mantle that has been guarded enough that it's, at least where we're seeing it now in the first few tenths of centimeters, that it is unrecognizable as a mantling unit yet. The relationship to the large boulders is, I think, one right now of just filleting and a small amount of covering because of the local gardening process. We haven't seen any clearly mantling relationship between the dark mantle or the surface materials here and the large boulders.
Okay, copy that. We'll be anxious to see what else we find out today. And one last word for your interest. The Marshall people have decided to allow us to go to 140 degrees on this EVA with the batteries if necessary. Okay, now, John, I'd like to talk to you about the fender fix.
Okay, hold on for 30
John's talking to me. Why don't you check my biomat out? We're going left.
Okay, fine. We'll take a check, Gino. Let me ask you one question here on the on Jack's water, on his Pliss water fill. We're showing about 3 pounds too much water in the LEM system, and we're wondering if you got the ox tank filled up in Jack's Pliss. Two questions. Were you sure to have the ox valve open? And did you see good clear water in the sight gauge with no bubbles after the fill of it?
I guess we'd have to say yes to those questions, but if you've got a question on it, we'd go through it again. I'd rather do that than take a chance.
Let me make sure we want to do that. While we're making sure I check with both home fronts, Nassau Bay and Tucson are both in good shape. Gino Tracy upstaged you for about 30 minutes last night on local TV during her own interview there, and drew everybody away from watching EVA during that time. She did very well.
Yeah, that sort of figures. Hey, Gordo, why do you say Jack Pliss? Did you see the water drop in the lamp when we charged mine?
It was the profile of the water quantity as you were filling both blisses, and it was the fill during Jack's fill that looked suspicious, like just maybe 3 pounds less than there should have been flow when you were filling Jack's.
Yeah, well, you know, it's only passive as to know whether or not you got it filled. I sure don't want to go out there and have him just have some partial water, so let's do the conservative thing.
Okay, I'll verify that. There was some drinking water going out at that time, too, which muddles up the data a little bit, so we're not absolutely certain on that.
Okay, we weren't drinking water while we were filling the plus, however. Okay, you come up with what you think best on that, and I'm ready to copy John.
Okay, Gino, I don't think you need to copy this.
You want to
sort of just ad lib it. With your 4 chronopaque maps, tape 2 maps and allow about a 1-inch overlap to a 15-inch by 10.5-inch configuration. That's estimate. And then repeat with 2 other maps, and then tape both the 2 maps, now 4 maps, tape them together, and you'll end up with a sheet that's about 15 inches by 19 inches, a sheet of chronopaque. And then tape both sides of it, the overlapping edges, to strengthen it. And you can further strengthen it if you tape up an X of tape across both sides of it. And then on the roll up on the long axis and secure it with a strip of tape and put it in the ETV. And on that strip of tape you secure it with, be sure and leave a tab on the end of it so you can get it off with your gloves. And then remove clamps from both the utility light units and open the clamp jaws to max. And then tighten the mounting bracket that you got on it so it'll be swinging around, and stow the clamps in the ETV. You got that, Gene?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then now you got everything you need, and it's all put together and all ready to be fastened to the rover. And then when you get the ETV in the seat, you unroll the chronopaque sheet and you locate the front edge with a long axis fore and aft, even with the axle. And you lay the edge of the sheet over the inboard guide rail and you clamp it. And you lay the other edge of the sheet over the outboard guide rail and clamp it. And as I said, the inboard clamp must be directly over the axle to avoid interference while steering, and tighten the clamps securely, both of them. And then while you're driving around out there by yourself, it'd be good if Jack could take a look at it and see if you're getting any unusual dynamics. And at station 2, you should inspect the fender for any unusual wear that might have been caused by this mass out there on the fender of those clamps bouncing up and down. One thing about it, doing it in a suit, Gene,
okay,
you have to push in with your leg and hold a, and it's sort of a two-handed job, and I'm not sure in 1/6G if you can position the fender, the pseudo fender on there without Jack, say, holding on to the long end behind a rover so that it won't fall off. It works okay in 1G for one man, but I'm not sure it's not a 2G proposition, a two-man proposition in 1/6, over.
Okay, we'll take a look at it, babe.
Okay, and you really have to bear down to get those things on a dovetail there.
I just want to make sure of this geometry now. We want to put the, take 2 of those stages and put the 10-inch sides together overlapping, right?
Yes, sir.
Then take two more and put the 10-inch side together overlapping, right?
That's true.
And then take those two pieces you've got now and put them end to end so you got the long along fender. Sounds right to me. Sound right to you?
Well, you end up with all four pieces in a big rectangle. See what I'm saying? You've got a 15-inch by a 19-inch sheet of paper.
Yeah, we got it, John.
Okay.
Count the overlap and everything. If you had no overlap, I guess you'd have about 16 by 20.
That's correct. But you need to overlap, and taping both sides of it gives it more strength, which you need in that situation. You just want to make sure it's not more than an inch, or you won't have enough to cover up those dovetails.
Okay, Dave, we're going to work on it right now.
Jack and Gene, this is Gordo again. On a plus charge, we're recommending you hook up jacks, and according to the decal, go right ahead and stand by one. Okay, go by the decal and do the full 5-minute fill on Jack's plus. It'll take that long to get the ox tank filled up if it was indeed empty. And maybe that's something you can start and work on the paper taping there.
Okay. Okay, Gordy, I started. I'm on step four on the decal, step five on the decal.
Okay, Jack. John Covington advises that the sight gauge is not a certain indicator that you're filled, and so we're just going to go by time to be sure and kind of disregard the sight gauge readings as a positive indication anyway.
Okay, understand that from the map, and we went exactly by time before. We'll try it again here.
Okay.
Okay, Gordy, is that about 5 minutes?
Stand by, see if anybody timed you here. That's firm, 5 minutes now.
7 is complete.
Okay, and we did not see any water flow to speak of, so it probably was full.
Yeah, the condensate indications here were that it was full.
Okay, that's better to be sure.
No questions.
Gino, this is Houston. We want to be sure to have one look at your biomed before you get into the suit, in case something's wrong with it. If you go right by the checklist, we'll miss that look. So if, when you get to a convenient point, if you can go to left and have us take a look at it, we'd appreciate it.
Gordy, apparently you...
Okay, stand by. I called it out, but I didn't give it to you. Stand by. Okay, now it's yours.
Okay. Okay, that looks good, Gino. You can press on with the suiting operation there.
In the little old thunder maker.
Roger.
S-band voice, going to voice.
Roger. Jack, Houston, with respect to the plus waterfowl, last thing we heard you say was doing step 7. We just want to verify that you did go ahead and do step 8, which is connect the waste management system to the plus aux vent for 10 seconds. Over.
Yes, that was all done, Gordy. We just got sidetracked and I didn't call you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Apollo Control at 138 hours, 59 minutes. America is in its 26th revolution. Up over the ocean of storms now. All going well with Ron Evans, the lunar sounder experiment being performed, and Ron taking a lot of pictures. This is Apollo Control. Bob Overmeyer is the America Capcom. Stu Russa is sitting there with him. Bob Parker will be the Challenger Capcom for the EVA. Gordon Fullerton has stayed over a little from his shift, getting ready to leave now, and John Young is at the Capcom console also. Chuck Lewis is the flight director for America. Pete Frank, the flight director for Challenger.
Okay, Gordo, Jack's coming up, and I'm going off the air.
Okay, Gordy, LMP is suited, and stand by. 2-4-1-2-8. PRD is 2-4-1-2-8. Houston, you copy the LMP?
Roger, copy 2-4-1-2-8. How come you guys aren't in flight director like I am?
And Bob 17040 is commander.
Say that again, please, Gino.
Last two digits are 40.
Copy that.
17040.
Thank you.
This is Apollo Control. We estimate that Challenger's crew is about 1 hour and 20 minutes behind the flight plan timeline. This is Apollo Control. Brigadier General Tom Stafford and Colonel Charlie Duke have joined the half dozen or so other astronauts at the Capcom console. This is Apollo Control at 139 hours, 29 minutes. We've had loss of signal on America as the spacecraft has gone behind the moon on its 26th revolution.